Welcome to the Speak As Well As You Think podcast, brought to you by Vautier Communications. I'm your host, Jen Alex, and the goal of this show is to uncover communication strategies and behaviors that you can use to improve the way that you show up and perform at work. We'll talk about what effective communication looks like in action so that you can apply it to your own career. If you'd like a written summary of each episode, subscribe to our weekly email newsletter by visiting vautiercommunications.com. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Speak As Well As You Think podcast. And this month, we are going to discuss our top five tips for how to keep an audience engaged. The best part about this is that the things that we're going to discuss, these are all within your control. So these are things that you can implement by looking at your audience, taking in their body language. If it seems like they're not as interested as they were before, or it's right after lunch and they're getting a little bit tired, these are adjustments that you can make in the moment and also things that you can plan in proactively to your messages. So those top five tips. Number one, we encourage you to make it about your audience. And I'll come back in detail as we discuss each of these in a bit. Tip number two, ask an easy, inclusive question. Tip number three, give your audience something to do. Tip number four, change your delivery. And tip number five, potentially shorten your sections. So let's start with going back to tip number one, making it about them. John, I'm going to throw this to you first to discuss what that means to you and some next steps that our listeners can take.
Of course. If any of you have listened to our podcast often over the years, we've shared this before. Any audience that a speaker interacts with is going to wonder two things before a talk starts. And those two things are, what is this about? And why is it important to me, the listener or attendee being here? So if you can qualify those two parts, which most of us are great doing, number one, hi, so-and-so, hi, team, we're here today to talk about blank. And that would be like your opening slide or whatever the header is on your first bullet point or talking point. Second part is the one that sometimes gets mixed or lost in translation, and it's helping the audience understand why is it important for them, or helping them gather what's in it for me. Mm-hmm. And this doesn't have to be anything truly scientific, anything magical. It can be simple, concise. I would argue it should be straightforward. But I'll just use our example. If listeners have been through executive communication skills, you've heard myself or Jen or Matt open a talk by saying, here's what we're talking about today. The course is called Effective or Executive Communication Skills. Here's why this is important to us. It's not about that you're doing things wrong and we're doing things right because you haven't been through a course like this or an experience like this with us before. Instead, the goal of the next two sessions is to help you better understand what are things that you can do in your control that will allow you to be your more or most effective self when you speak. Then what are things that you can avoid? Things that you may not be aware of now that in turn are causing you to be least or less effective. We'll call them blind spots because for obvious reasons, if you knew they existed, you wouldn't be doing them.
Yep.
But that helps set the table right out of the gates. And we call that the hook. Once you get that audience involved, the ability to manage the material and content and make it about them is significantly higher than having them wait and wait and wait and wonder first 10 minutes, first 20 minutes, first half hour, what exactly is the importance for me, or why exactly am I here? And if you can alleviate those pain points early, the potential for success is so much higher.
The ability for your audience to stay listening and paying attention is also far greater when you tell them at the very beginning how it's going to help them or benefit them or why it's important, because it helps level set that there's a purpose for you being here.
Yeah.
And in a lot of organizations' cultures today, it's very meeting heavy. I'm sure we have a lot of listeners that are on back-to-back-to-back meetings all day long. Some of those are very important for you to be on, your direct connection to the project, the initiative that's being discussed, or something that's being run. And some of the other ones, you might not be. And so you feel like, what is the purpose of me being here and talking or listening to this information? And if it doesn't have some direct impact to me, that's where people start to multitask. They tune out. They don't really care about the information. They could miss important things. So being able to tell people from the very beginning why is going to help them in the long run.
Yeah. And I think another big piece about it too is what we talk about with first impressions, something that we've gone through a number of times in different podcast episodes, but that first 5 to 10 minutes matters a lot if you're only speaking for an hour. So making sure that you can gather one, the fact that you're speaking to something they care about, but two, that you're speaking to something you have some credibility on. Setting both of those standards are important to what we call get your foot in the door and continue that message or continue that meeting. Similar to Jen's message and how she went through it there, you can't really just walk in and expect them to listen. You have to give them a little bit of information and kind of have that follow up in order to gain that from the audience.
Especially in the world of hybrid channels and hybrid delivery. I would bet many listeners think, John, I had a lot better handle of engagement 5, 6 years ago when my audience was in front of me. You know, we just had meetings in person, we had talks in person, we had presentations in person, communicating happened more in person on site. Today's world, 5, 6 years later, post-COVID, so much is happening virtually, so much is happening across a hybrid lens. Yes, there are still things taking place in person, and we're seeing it come back more. But you can't ignore the fact that some of your audience, or in some cases, most of the audience or most of the interactions are happening in a space. If you don't keep that audience hooked or engaged, you know they're going to start to tune out, or they're already multitasking, and so you're fighting an uphill battle.
So I think that really ties us into tip number two, asking easy, inclusive questions. And something my dad always used to say, get your audience engaged, do it early and do it often. So it's not just one question in a 60-minute talk, but it's somehow tying them in multiple different times. So Matt, I'll go to you on this one first. Any recommendations from you there?
Yeah, I think when we hear easy and inclusive question, we tend to think a question about whatever information we're talking about, and that doesn't necessarily have to be true. Realistically, what we're looking for is something to create a little bit of dialogue or a little bit of back and forth with that audience. That doesn't necessarily mean that I get 5 minutes into my content and I pause and I just say questions. No, again, ask them for their thoughts or their feelings or how they would have dealt with a scenario or their general take on what it is we're showing to them on the board. Because as we can get that ball rolling, we're allowing them to feel a bit more, one, comfortable, but two, heard and included in that conversation. We're no longer stuck standing at the front of the room as though we are speaking at them and they are just there to listen to us. But instead, we're in, again, that inclusive and comfortable environment where they can share their opinions, we can share ours, and we can come to that best possible consensus.
I'll take what Matt said there about comfort. It truly makes the experience more collaborative. And you open up, you let that audience bring their guards down to some extent, or just recognize there's an opportunity here for us to engage. This is going to be a two-way interaction. It's not going to be lecture-based. The questions don't always have to be open-ended or closed-ended. Play with questions with intent. If you truly want a closed-ended question because you just want to get people involved early, great. Then you might parlay that into, let me ask something open-ended where I'm forcing them to think a bit outside the box. Or really give some insight or share some background on their experience, their roles, their responsibilities, what they do on their teams. But it does help, to Matt's point, get people involved. And that's what you want. You want these meetings to happen where others feel like, okay, that was time well spent because my voice was allowed to be heard too.
And I think it directly ties us back into tip number one, making it about them. If you ask somebody to share, you've been in this situation before. How did it go for you? That gives you data or information for what have they struggled with before or what has gone really well, and how can I highlight some of those things throughout this training or meeting that I might be providing? Or how can I make sure that I include some of those pain points or struggles that they've experienced so this makes it even more relevant and important to them?
And then all of a sudden, people realize I also had that experience, or I can relate to that too. I can connect with that as well. It's almost one of those, as Matt said, the snowball effect of, okay, people start to hear others sharing insight or sharing their experiences. And all of a sudden, it's not a surprise when a lot of other bodies in the room can resonate or relate to it.
I do want to touch on something because I know I've gotten clients ask me tons of times, Jen, do you ask an audience to wait until the end to ask questions or you encourage people to ask them throughout. My stance is always I'll encourage people to ask them throughout because it gives us that engagement. It gives us something that the audience can think about how this might relate to them and know that it's okay to raise their hand or ask a question on how would you handle this or what should I do in this situation. Now, some of it is dependent on the setting. So if you're in like a big conference talk, it might be better to have questions come at the end because you can manage providing all the information so that a Q&A section doesn't just hijack the entire experience. But think about and consider allowing people to and encouraging them to ask questions throughout because it can help with that consistent engagement from start to finish.
The other nice piece about it with the consistent engagement is we see less on the back end. We get into a lot of these meetings where we don't have any of that engagement within, and then everybody has 5, 10, 15, 20 questions for us via IM or via Outlook or wherever else. And we can do a lot of that cutting out if we ask those questions in the right way.
Yeah, great point. Tip number three, give them something to do. And this isn't always relevant in every single meeting based on the topic, but I do think that this is an important one, especially again, considering your back-to-back-to-back meeting culture. Things get dry. By the time you are on your fifth meeting of the day, if there's no interaction at all, people are tired. It's hard for them to continue to focus and listen, even if they have the best intentions in mind. So, John, back to you first on this one. Recommendations for how you can give people something to do, what that might look like.
Sure. I'd say step one is you've got to know your purpose. If it's just informative, then tell them that this is going to be more of an update for us today. That being said, write down one thing that you weren't clear on coming out of our last meeting. And this gives them some idea or activity. Get the wheels moving so that hopefully you know, okay, my purpose today is to inform, update, educate. I'm going to help clarify some things. And one of those things might be something that Matt wrote down. If it's a do this message, you already know you've got a call to action coming. You know, you're trying to recommend or propose or persuade or influence people to move in a direction. Once you have an idea of that based on you knowing your purpose, then you can decide how can I gracefully or with impact allow the audience to get involved early, giving them a task to do. I want us, as we go through the recommendation today, to jot down some ways we think we might be able to best implement this across our next 3 weeks. But this way, they're listening through some new focused lens as you start to deliver content to them. And those are just two ways off the top of the head, but I do think a lot of how you decide to give them something to do is going to be a product of you knowing what your purpose in speaking is.
Right.
Yeah, and I think a big piece of it there, John, is the kind of breadcrumbing that audience to follow along. It's we're not necessarily telling them, hey, we want you to sit there and we want you to take notes or anything of that nature, but we're asking them to listen a little bit more intently back to point one, more for their benefit than for ours. While we are getting something out of that as the speaker, maybe we're getting more engagement, more questions, more of whatever it is they have for us. On the other side, we're also getting a little bit more give and take from those audience members. They're sitting there, they want to hear what it is we're talking about. And again, that generally makes it a bit more of an efficient share.
And I would even say, Matt, going back to your point on knowing the audience, the better you know your audience, the more strategic you can get with those asks. You might know there's three folks from accounting in the room on that talk during that meeting, and you want them to do something from an analytic standpoint. You know, you've got a couple folks from sales in the room. You want them to start to think through, hey, how are we going to bring this to market? You've got a couple folks from operations in there, and you want them to start to think about, hey, look at this from an operations standpoint. When we do get this to market, what are some things you might expect? Pain points from the customer. Again, it varies greatly based on your content or the message you're sharing. But if you know that audience well, you can then segment out these two people. I'd like you to focus on these things. Here's what I want you to do during the meeting. This subset or this business unit, this is going to be your tasks, and you highlight that at the beginning.
This also ties back into Matt's recommendation in the last section of avoiding having all of these questions and comments that come out after with, Teams chats and emails. If you allow people to put their hands on the thing that you're discussing, whether it's a recommendation or an educational piece in the meeting itself, play around with it, think about how I might apply this. I think I've got it, but I'm a little stuck on this section. Is this the correct way to go about it? It allows people to do that in the time we have together, work out some of those kinks, make sure that we can clarify information, we understand what is being requested of us or how we might utilize these things. And that can alleviate a lot of that back and forth that multiple people might have in these one-on-ones after the meeting itself. So it continues to allow your audience to be part of the meeting. It feels inclusive. We've used that word a lot so far today, but it allows them to also put their hands on it. Our programs are a little bit different because they're built and the whole purpose is a learn by doing approach. But when people can not only learn information, but also apply it, they're much more likely to remember it and be able to retain and put those next steps into play versus just receiving information and then having that speaker or the training say, good luck. Hope you can put this together as you leave. Step number four, we have recommendations on potentially changing your delivery. And this can come in a variety of different places, but Matt, I'll go to you first on how you interpret changing that delivery, and then some suggestions you have under that umbrella. And then, John, I'm sure you're going to have some more things to add as well.
Yeah, I think this is going to be one of the more diverse of sections that we'll talk about in terms of skill sets and things that we can go through, mainly because it depends on the audience that we're working with. This is one of the first tips we hear where you can apply these skills differently depending on if the audience is frustrated with your message or supportive of it, or whether they're having a good or bad day. Again, anything in between, whatever those emotions may be. For me, I think the big piece is first things first, when you walk in, you have to be approachable with that delivery. Drop the speed aside. Make sure that your tone, if you were to listen to yourself back in a third party recording, is somebody you would want to listen to the tone of their voice. Again, it's not coming across aggressive. It's not coming across as they're bored and they don't want to be at the front of that room, because again, that's the number one way to turn that audience off. If they don't think we want to be there, the likelihood that they want to be there is very, very, very low. So from there, then getting into that content with the approachability, we can talk more about the general cadence or how we build that message. I think a big thing to remember is our audiences aren't all up to speed as well as we are on the topics we're speaking through. So we may have some individuals that come in and are a bit more novice in what they know. We need to take that information slower. No matter who it is in that room, likelihood is, if we were asked to put that presentation together, we know it better than everybody that's in front of us. So again, taking that step back and making sure that we're not going too quickly, we don't have too much information all at once, I think is really the first place to go in terms of that delivery.
Yeah, and I would say your ability to pivot, right? Stay flexible, stay fluid, but I like sports analogy, so I'll use this. You can call an audible or change how your game plan is going to get executed over the course of a game. Obviously, when coaches and teams go into big games or not big games, they've got a game plan on how they want to execute things. But that can change after quarter one. It most likely changes at halftime. It can change inning by inning if we're talking about baseball, but you read the room, you call the audibles, you make adjustments on the fly. And to Matt's point, because you know the content best, it gives you the freedom to say, hey, I'm going to make a lane change here because I'm seeing something or hearing something from the audience that makes me think this will be value add to do it. And as long as you're changing delivery or adjusting cadence or managing movement or any of those physical vocal skills, or as it relates to the message, as long as you're doing it purposefully, you should get good outcomes from it. It's not, let me throw this on the front of the room just to see if it works or see if it fits. It wouldn't be doing it for the sake of, let me just throw change because change can be fun. It's, I know why I'm wanting to change something or shift something, and here's what I'm going to do about it.
And some of that again is just resetting the audience's attention, helping them refocus and saying something a little bit faster. Just to hook people back in, they hear a difference and it refocuses their attention, perhaps slowing down a little bit. A key takeaway or a really important point, I might say it slower, or I might say it and then leave some space in between that and the next thing that I'm going to share. I might speak a little louder in a specific section and then vary my tone, bring it down a little bit. So there's variation in how you're delivering the information that can just refocus your audience's attention back on you. Any difference usually gets people's attention and draws them back in. A change in your delivery could be movement if you are in person. Again, we call it purposeful movement. So you're not pacing the room, you're not trying to get 10,000 steps in your hour meeting, but walking towards somebody to, as you speak with them, is an engaging move. It draws their attention up to you. Maybe having, we go back to giving them something to do. We have people work in partners or small groups. And as the speaker, you're moving around the room, chit-chatting and talking with each of those groups, hearing their takeaways or the things that they've been talking about. And maybe I stop everybody and say, hey, group number two over here just brought up a really great point. I want to share that with you. And then I want everybody to think about how that might apply to your role. But there's different ways that I can use that change. And to John's point, reading your audience and knowing if things are working well, keep going down that route. If it seems like you're starting to get a couple of those long blanks or people that might be looking at a cell phone or jotting some notes down or maybe even doodling, that's where a change can be really helpful in grabbing people back in.
Yeah, it's not, don't try to fix what's not broken. If something is working well, take full advantage. You know you're on the right track. You put the correct game plan together, but change for the sake of change can sometimes work against you as opposed to work for you.
Absolutely. And then leading into our fifth and final tip, we have potentially shorten your sections. And I think to John's point, this is really important in being able to read your audience and call those audibles when you need to. How do you do that? How do people shorten a section? What are the things that they need to consider or think about in order to do that effectively so that it's not just I buzz past five slides and say, well, we don't have time to talk about these, so let me just jump to the end. So, how can we do shortening effectively?
It's knowing your audience again. It's figuring out who's the audience. And then I like to, I coach this often, bracket your content, need to know, nice to know. Anything nice to know immediately when you start to do the planning process, just move off to the side. Don't necessarily dump it yet, but at least move it off to the side so you know, okay, that content is nice, but it's not required. I don't think it's absolutely necessary value add. As you go through and you make adjustments and you go from draft one to draft two before you get to your final draft, you can always reassess and say, does this now qualify as something that fits in the need to know area? But I know we've talked about this in previous talks before. It's nice to have the ability to say, okay, here's my 30-minute version, here's my 3-minute version, and here's if I get 30 seconds. Because just this week, I was working with a group more healthcare focused, and they said, John, it's not uncommon for us to be in a 30-minute meeting. Then we're told with 5 minutes left, so and so, what do you have? We just have the last 5 minutes here. And it's almost like, oh my gosh, okay, I had a lot of information that I thought I was going to be able to provide in a 30-minute window. 25 minutes is now gone, and I got none of that. What do I do with five? And you can't just put yourself on fast forward and speed through 5 minutes worth of content, jamming 30 minutes into it. But as long as you know, okay, here's my cliff notes. Here's the most important things that I feel like you need to walk away with, given our time domain. Everything else I'll share with you in an email or I'll follow up separately. But that can be a helpful way for you to shorten sections and really focus your attention on value add for the listeners.
And one of the things we talk about in our visual messages section of our course, we have a slide that literally just says, what is the purpose of this slide? And as you're going through and building out your slide deck or you're organizing your notes, it doesn't have to be just a PowerPoint slide, but the concept is when you get to that slide, as you're going through and practicing, ask yourself, what is the purpose of this slide? And if you don't have an answer to that or you can't succinctly share that, if time were cut short, it's unnecessary information. So that's where you could tie it back to John's point of separating information of nice to know from need to know. But make sure you can label what that key takeaway is. If I have to cut time, I get to a slide or I get to a section and I say, here are the three things I want you to know about this one. And I label those out. If I have time to share detail about them, I can. If not, at least they have those key takeaways right up front.
I think that comes down to when we're going through that prep period and we are actually building that presentation. We have to remember it's a lot easier to shorten those sections when those slides don't have every little piece of information on them. To John's point, when you have just the need to know information on the slides, it's much easier to give them the nice to know if we want to make it longer. But if we need to shorten it up, only having the most important pieces. Again, there's a bit less fluff, it's a lot more efficient, and we're making sure that in their frame of view or what they're looking at behind us, they're not looking at anything that we would call excess.
Awesome. So when we think about maintaining engagement, it really starts and ends with you as the speaker. We have to maintain that energy. We have to sound interested in what we're talking about because, to Matt's point earlier, if the speaker doesn't sound interested in the information, I can promise you the audience is going to have a really tough time finding that interest or curiosity in paying attention. You can do a variety of things by getting people involved, whether it's asking questions, sharing stories, acknowledging how they might feel in about a certain thing, and then just adjust that content when you need to. But to recap, those top five tips we have for maintaining engagement: make it about your audience, ask an early and/or inclusive question, give them something to do, change your delivery style, and then shorten those sections when need be. As always, we are always interested in hearing if you have another topic you would like discussed. Please feel free to respond directly to our newsletter email if you are a part of that, and we would get any other future topics in the rotation of an upcoming podcast. Thanks so much, and see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Speak As Well As You Think podcast, brought to you by Vautier Communications. Again, I am your host, Jen Alex. Vautier Communications is in the business of business communication skills. We coach and train both individuals and groups on how to elevate their presence and increase their impact through the way they communicate, present, and write. If you want to learn more about our in-person or virtual training options, visit our website at www.vautiercommunications.com. Thanks for listening.